person.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Wild Card Weekend in the NFL, and we are Next Fan Up, the podcast for the fans by the fans. We're here tonight. There are three super fans with me that all have, like dogs in the race. They're all teams that are still playing for their playoff hopes. With me today, first, I have Nick, who is the Chiefs super fan. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing good. I'm just still trying to figure out if Kirk Cousins liked that. Did that?
I'm sure he did. Greg, how you doing, buddy? Greg is the Pittsburgh super fan.
I'm doing great. I think I'm suffering from some deja vu, but I'm doing great otherwise.
Awesome. Greg, I wanted to tell you thank you and for the great like challenge in Pick'em. Greg ended up winning our league. Congratulations, man, just officially on the podcast to say I was two picks behind him. Greg had an awesome run down the stretch to take it from me. I had been in the lead most of the season, but he took it right at the end. Very impressive. Man, it was a crazy end of the season. What'd you think, Greg, as you were picking through that? Anything? Any insight you learned as you went down the stretch?
You just got to take those home teams. That's all I could say. So, you did a great job setting the pace all year. So,
I thought I got that tip from you. It was just simply as soon as I heard you say that, I think even on a podcast, I was like, yeah, man, I'm just taking all the home teams. I'll switch like my three favorite, you know, road teams against those. And I was doing so well. But then, I don't know, man, you had great picking at the end. The last super fan I have with us tonight is Jimmy, the super fan for the Carolina Panthers, who didn't have to play this week. We'll be playing next week. How you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, what's going on? I tell you what, watching games this week and not having your team play, it sucks, but I can't wait till next week.
No, for sure, man. I'm sure you got to be jonesing. It's gonna be a great week of football. I'm really excited for next week. We're going to go over all the games from this week that we've already played, talk a little bit about next weekend, what's coming up. To start us off, let's kick it off with Nick. We'll go in order that the games happened. The very first game was not really a game. Kansas City just destroyed Houston literally from the kickoff. Tell us about this game, Nick. How excited were you just to see you dismantle another team?
Well, as you said, it was a total destruction, 30-0. I think it's been a long time since the Chiefs have – well, first of all, it's been 22 years since the Chiefs have won a playoff game, period, in 8 appearances. And so that was really the biggest deal about this. And it's also why I think every team had just a big ball of anxiety, even with as far ahead as the Chiefs were for most of the game, that just somehow there was going to be a trapdoor somewhere. Because the Chiefs did have like a 28-point lead in the last time we were in the playoffs and ended up still losing that game. This one there was never any real chance of this getting out of the Chiefs' hands. As you mentioned, Nile Davis took the opening kickoff, 160 yards for a touchdown. I think that was actually the longest kickoff return for a touchdown the biggest, at least in a wild card game in NFL history. The story of this game really was the Chiefs did on defense more or less what they've been doing to a lot of teams over their winning stretch. Alex Smith actually had a pretty good game, but not great. But the big thing is that Brian Hoyer just did everything he could to help the Chiefs win this one. Similar to that Peyton Manning game. Well, the last game against the Broncos that the Chiefs played, where Peyton Manning threw us 5 interceptions. This time, Brian Hoyer threw 4 and also fumbled 1 just for good measure. And really the only big play that Houston made was Alfred Blue broke off a 50-yard run that then set them up for a very nice Brian Hoyer red zone interception. But other than that, what was most impressive to me about this game, frankly, was the way that Andy Reid's his overall game plan worked. That they totally neutralized J.J. Watt. He was held to just one tackle, no sacks. That it wasn't really much of an impact because they were either double teaming him, and every single time they had either running backs or wide receivers coming out of the backfield or near to the tackle box and just chipping on him every single time. No matter what they were doing, they were getting a couple of bodies to hit him. Just give him just enough of a just enough to slow him down so that Smith could complete his passes and the runners could get through and get past him. It was a highlight reel for the rest of the defense. Josh Maga, Sean Smith, Marcus Peters, and Eric Berry each came away with an interception. And the Chiefs did basically what they do normally on the ground as well. Travis Kelce ended up having – it's interesting because he had his best game in week one against the Texans, and he again had his best game ever since. He ended up with 8 receptions for 128 yards. And the big scary point, though, was that Jeremy Maclin went down with a knee injury at some point during the game, and he was visibly emotional about it. I think he thought he was done, that he'd torn his ACL or something, and that he was not only going to miss the playoffs, but I mean, at this point, if you were to get an ACL injury at this point of the calendar year, you're going to miss like half of the next season too, at least. But it turns out the best news is that today they did an MRI, negative for any knee damage. He has a high ankle sprain, but apparently most of the pain is in his heel. And so it's likely he's going to even be able to play this Sunday, which is great. But yeah, for the Texans, it's a really, really tough loss. I'm sure it was hard to watch for Texans fans because there's nothing positive on their end, really. And what does make it interesting is I think it has proven that this is a team that if they get a legitimate quarterback in there, someone just slightly above average, better than Hoyer, then they're going to be back here next year probably.
So if you lose Maclin, tell us a little bit about your receiving core. What happens to it? Who shifts up?
It'll be interesting. The guy who's been our number two and has developed this year is Albert Wilson, who is an undrafted free agent out of Georgia, I think. And he's shown a lot, but he still makes a few mental errors per game. He had some decent catches in this game. They used him as a runner a few times, actually. But he also, you know, he had like one really deep pass to him in this game where it was a bit overthrown, true, but if he would have laid out for it, he probably would have gotten it. And another time, like a really good throw came to him on the sidelines, and if he just didn't drag one of his feet. And like, you know, it's those sorts of things he's still not doing quite well enough. Chris Conley, our third round pick this year, he's got the speed and the ability. He ended up with a touchdown in this game, but he's also learning. So, I mean, it's going to be pretty shaky. If Matt isn't there, that's a huge loss of production for the Chiefs. I mean, they'll be throwing it a lot more to Kelce, and I'm sure the Patriots would be all over Kelce all game. And they'd just be having to do a lot more of tossing it to the running backs out of the backfield, things like that. I definitely don't want them to rush him back if he's not ready, but it's going to be hugely positive if they can get him on the field for at least some snaps and some catches next Sunday.
For sure, Saturday, for sure. Actually. Greg, Jimmy, do you have any questions for Nick or comments about the game?
I thought it was a great game. I feel bad for Brian Hoyer, and I think Brian Hoyer's struggles legitimize my fears about Kansas City. I think they might have the best defense remaining. And I do know that means Carolina and Denver are out there, but, I mean, Kansas City looked great. Do you think their pass rush is going to keep that up going forward, Nick?
I think so, because their pass rush has been banged up, basically. I mean, both Houston and Holly have been – not neither at 100%, but they're coming back now off of injuries. And so they were even rotating them in and out quite a bit in this game. I think they only played probably each of them about half the snaps. And so as they get healthier and they see, you know, more time on the field, it's going to – you know, they're definitely going to be better in the next few weeks in the playoffs if they, you know, obviously get beyond this next step, because the guys behind them are a big, big step down.
Greg, yeah. Tell us a little bit about to move on to the Pittsburgh Cincinnati game. Is there anything more on KC before I move forward? Okay. To get into the Pittsburgh Cincinnati game, Greg, this was a crazy game, very close. I was amazed at all the defensive games this weekend. We usually, you know, the old saying is defense wins championships, and we saw a lot of great defenses. Obviously, KC totally shutting a team down, and then these next two games, really defensive battles. Greg, what did you think? How did you guys come out and pull this game?
Well, this game, it was a defensive battle, not only because it was an AFC North matchup, but because there was a lot of rain throughout the game. So passing was at a premium in the game. And the game itself, just to avoid all the controversy at the end for right now, Steelers, I felt, dominated the game for the first three quarters. And I think Cincinnati's defense played great by not giving up red zone touchdowns, really. They gave the one butt catch to Martavis Bryant. But other than that, they made the Steelers settle for four field goals in the red zone throughout the night. And that is what really kept them in the game. To proceed down through the game, I mean, there was a lot of penalties, even on the coaching staff of the Steelers. Mike Munchak got a penalty in the first half for unsportsmanlike conduct for pulling a cornerback's hair on the Bengals. And I think A.J. McCarron really played well throughout the game, even though his stat line didn't show it. Through the first three quarters of the game, the difference in the game really was turnovers. Cincinnati had three turnovers in the first three quarters of the game, and the Steelers only had one. And basically, to jump towards the end of the game came down. The Bengals came charging back to take the lead by a point with, I don't know, about 2 minutes left. Then they knocked Ben Roethlisberger out of the game. They were able to get Landry Jones to come in the game and throw an interception to apparently seal the game. And then who should have been the goat of the game, I guess, was Jeremy Hill, who he unfortunately fumbled with 90 seconds left inside the 30-yard line for the Steelers. Then they proceeded to, and I don't know if you saw this, Mark, or not, but they had this huge controversy where the Steelers marched down the field, and with about, I don't know, 15 seconds or so, there was a hit on a defenseless receiver, which was Antonio Brown from Burfict, the linebacker. And then there was some squabbling between Joey Porter and the rest of the Bengals on the field. Joey Porter, the linebacker's coach for the Steelers. And they called another 15-yard penalty on Pac-Man Jones, leaving the Steelers with like a 35-yard field goal to win the game. And that's been hugely debated these last 24 hours. I've been kind of going crazy on Twitter with it all.
So what is your stance, Greg? What do you think of it all?
I mean, it's a lot to take in 24 hours, to be honest. It was a very chippy game. I thought it was well officiated until the end. And I actually agreed with the penalties on the Bengals, of course. I mean, not only did it help my team win, but I thought the character of the Bengals really let them down at the end there, having guys like Pac-Man Jones on the team. And perfect. I don't want to say too much other about it because I don't want to be too pessimistic or anything on the Bengals, because I know English Simon had a tough run with it. It was a really heartbreaking loss for the Bengals because it really was not about the Steelers winning the game in the fourth quarter. It was about the Bengals losing it, because the Bengals did have an awesome comeback to take the lead and put the Steelers away. And it was the fumble and then the penalties that really destroyed their hopes. I do feel bad for the Cincinnati fan base, but I mean, I'm happy we're moving on. Yeah, that's pretty much a recap.
Nick and Jimmy, do you have any questions for Greg or any comments on the game?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, this game became Shakespearean almost in the amount of just like blood feuding there was going on. I mean, you talked about the stuff at the very end, but even leading up to that, I mean, it's really the whole fourth quarter, it got just so intense. A big part of the controversy was Gio Bernard caught this short pass coming out of the flat. And just as he swiveled his head around, he got just totally laid out by Shazier, and the helmet to helmet. And it was one of those ones where, you know, obviously he was instantly concussed. As soon as he got hit that hard in the head, he just went ragdoll and dropped the ball. And Pittsburgh recovered. And so, but, you know, initially they just said that he was down by contact or whatever, and replayed a show that, yeah, I mean, he did fumble, but, you know, and Pittsburgh challenged that, and the fans were really angry about the thing overall, because it was, you know, I think the calls were all correct, but it was exactly the sort of play that the league I know wants to reduce, because he did turn around and he was probably technically a runner at that point, but he just got slammed on the helmet to helmet. And it was close enough that, you know, half a second earlier, that would have been a penalty on the Steelers. And he dropped the ball only because he was unconscious. And so it was sort of, it was a really ugly way of there being a turnover there. And so then right after that, though, the Steelers then get the ball back, and Ben gets sacked and hurt. And as he's being taken off the field, Bengals fans are like pelting him with water bottles on the cart, which was pretty nuts. And then, you know, and it was so, you know, it was just building and building and building all of this to the point. And that's why I think the Bengals players just lost their minds at the very end of it. And it's a real shame because it was a really dirty, and you know, Greg's being restrained with, you know, his description of it too, but the perfect hit on Antonio Brown that caused the initial penalty that started a lot of this madness in the final seconds, it was a super dirty hit. I mean, Brown didn't complete the pass anyway, and Burford came in and just, I mean, it was the sort of hit that, like, you could see breaking someone's neck. And so, you know, it was just like it was a really sad end to a professional football game, in my opinion.
I agree with you, Nick. I think that was a sad way for the game to end because I thought it was a great game. If you liked chippiness and aggressiveness and hard hitting football, even the you know, how Ben Burfict was actually the guy who knocked Ben out of the game also with his sack, and I had no problem with that sack. I mean, that was a great play by Burfict. It was really a disappointing way to end the game because it was such a great game up until then with the physicalness. I mean, it was raining and downtrodden that way and, you know, defensive minded, but both defenses, especially the linebacking corps, I thought played amazing. You know, Ray Maliulua and Burfict were filling holes in the running game very well. Shazier probably had his best game since he was at Ohio State. I mean, it was a great game. And how it ended was just a shame that it had to end that way.
That is fascinating hearing about that, the fumble on the concussion. That, like, yeah, that, like, actually what makes you fumble is when you're knocked in unconscious by an illegal hit. Should that still be a fumble? Like, I think that's definitely something they will talk about possibly.
I would argue that there is no doubt that it was a illegal hit because Bernard actually had the chance to catch himself, turn, and Shazier was shot out of a gun.
I didn't see the hit. So if he hit him and if he knocked him unconscious, where was the concussion? From helmet to helmet, or his head hitting the ground?
It was a helmet to helmet hit. But Bernard had actually caught the ball in the flat and was turning up field and never saw Shazier because Shazier was coming from his back. But it was like, totally. I mean, he had time to actually catch the ball and turn, so he's no longer defenseless. So by rule,
I understand,
you know,
that. I'm going just the helmet to helmet if they're trying to limit those for concussions. But yeah, if like you knock somebody unconscious with your helmet and they drop the ball, is that a fumble? I'm curious if that kind of thing will come up for review this year. Somebody else was speaking up. I'm sorry, what were you saying? You had a question maybe or something for Greg.
Hey, Greg, question for you. I haven't heard anything as far as Ben's injury, the extent of it, as well as Antonio Brown. Have you heard anything as far as what their outlook is for next week?
Well, Brown has already been predicted that he is going to play next week, regardless of the concussion. They said he's already made good progress after the concussion, so they're optimistic that he's going to play already. And Ben, they had an MRI today that he does have an AC sprain in his shoulder. And that was another part of the incredible thing was there is some Ben is a little bit of a drama queen. He claimed that he could only throw the ball about 20 yards when he came back in the fourth quarter to lead the field goal drive. And he's day-to-day. They expect him to play. But that's an interesting matchup for next week because you have Peyton Manning who can't throw the ball more than 20 yards, and you might have Ben Roethlisberger who can't throw the ball more than 20 yards. So,
I got a quick thought for you guys for the Bengals. Marvin Lewis is now 0-7 in the playoffs, and the way this game ended, the way they lost control, I think Marvin Lewis should be done in Cincinnati. I think that regime of the out-of-control Bengals and the attitude poked its head out at the worst moment in this playoff game, and it goes to show you, I think the character of this team is still there as a dirty, bad team that Marvin Lewis just does not have control of. And I think it's time to move on from Marvin Lewis and that regime
and get this team to the next level, because they got the talent to win, but I just think Marvin Lewis is not the guy that's going to take him there.
I'm glad you brought up that issue, because there's been all sorts of stuff swirling, especially, you know, you have, because the other thing is that Hugh Jackson, who's been really amazing in terms of getting this offense to where it was with Dalton, where they were just absolutely humming this year. I mean, he's one of the hottest head coaching candidates in various different places. And so the thing is, I mean, I definitely see the rationale for firing Lewis, but if they lose Lewis and, you know, you got Hugh Jackson going out the door as well, you're losing a lot of the things that were making this a very good team. It throws a lot of uncertainty at what is currently a successful team. And so there's been some speculation that maybe they fire Lewis and give Hugh Jackson the head coaching job, essentially promote him as a way of keeping him as well. But apparently Hugh and Marvin are pretty close, and you know, he may not be cool with that, of essentially stabbing his friend in the back and taking his job. But it's going to be really interesting to see what happens there.
And additionally to that, even with the coaching staff aside, I was reading up yesterday in the pregame, the Bengals have 19 pending free agents, including Sanu and Marvin Jones. So they could be really deprived of talent, mattering what happens, and need someone to rebuild the team. So with all those pending free agents, it might not be the right time to move on from a coaching staff either.
Mm. Jimmy, looking at the Seattle-Minnesota game, this game was a defensive game as well. You are now going to face Seattle next week. What did you see in this game?
I think the game was minus 5 degrees at the start of kickoff, so this game was definitely controlled by the weather. Just looked like everyone was running in slow mode from the kickoff to the final snap of the game. Just everything looked slow, just the passes in the air, the movement of the players, it just looked really slow. So it was definitely a cold game up there in Minnesota, but it was also fun to watch. I do think Minnesota was the best team on the field today, but as far as the season, Seattle definitely, I think, is a better team than Minnesota at this point. But I think Minnesota outplayed Seattle in 3 of the 4 quarters and came up short the first half of the game. Minnesota goes into the locker room 3-0 and then looked well in control. And eventually going up 9-0 after 2 field goals, and it just seemed like Minnesota had this thing in control. But for some reason, that magic that Russell Wilson has, there's a play of the game, I'm sure you'll see it on Top 10 SportsCenter or any highlight show. It's a bad snap. Ball goes about 10 yards behind Russell Wilson. He picks up, and with his calm and collectedness, he makes a completion to Tyler Lockett, who runs it down to the 5. The next play, play action, touchdown. Now you got a 9-7 ball game. And just things seem to be in Seattle control from there on out, even though down in the score, just seemed like, you know, Seattle's going to find a way to pull this out. And it was a good game. I thought Teddy Bridgewater showed some maturity here. I think Minnesota's got their guy in Teddy Bridgewater definitely after this game. Another late fumble by Adrian Peterson in the game to give Seattle the ball. That fumble caused by Cam Chancellor, but also late in the game, when the Vikings are driving down the field to get that game-winning field goal, pass interference on Cam Chancellor, and then the following play, Kyle Rudolph beats Cam Chancellor on a play where Cam's going for the pick instead of the tackle and forcing him out of bounds. So his aggressiveness is definitely exposed. I think moving on to next week, I think Carolina is going to definitely target that aggressiveness with Greg Olsen in the tight end. I'm surprised Minnesota did not use Kyle Rudolph as much as they did. Kyle Rudolph, I think, could have exposed that middle and the aggressiveness of this defense. But in the long run, I think the better team won. Seattle is now going to have to travel to Carolina, to which I think is going to be just a very physical game, two similar teams. It's going to be a very, very physical match, and I'm looking to beat up Seattle. They've knocked us out of the playoffs 2 years in a row now. I'm looking to knock them out, but I definitely think that this is the two best teams in the NFC going at it. So it should be a really good game. I feel bad for Minnesota. They had it. It was a cold, cold game, but Seattle is just a better team, and they found a way to win.
What did you think of that PI? I was kind of bummed by that. As I was watching the game, it was such a defensive weekend up until this point. And we're watching these two defenses battle it out in this bitter cold weather. And then Chancellor, I thought, got a ticky-tack PI call. I understand it is contact and it is down the field. But this is also a playoff game. And if that kicker wasn't horrible at the end there, they would win that game based on that call. I know after that call, he got a couple more completions and got really close. But he was already in range just with that call, with that PI call. He was pretty much like already there, like at the edge of 35 to kick the field goal and win the game. I personally felt that was that they should have let them play, and that Chancellor just stood there. He kind of just posted up like in basketball and let the receiver run into him. I don't know. It didn't feel like he was grabbing or he, you know, hit him or anything. He kind of just stood in his way. I don't know. What do you guys think? Was that PI legit? How did that feel to you?
It definitely felt like a cheap PI call. I can see what you're saying, ticky-tacky, because what it was called, I'm like, I don't know about that one. It's just one of those, like, I don't know. Just that didn't seem right. And just seemed like just one of those, looks like the refs are trying to get the Vikings in the position here. I didn't like the call personally. I thought it was you're reaching for it, but there was some contact, but I say let them play. Let that go.
Yeah. And I think Seattle's the better team, like you said. But go ahead. Oh, was that somebody else clicking in? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I had one. I just know that earlier in the game, Collinsworth was definitely focusing on Chancellor, where he got away with one or two other, like, holding or, you know, not PIs, but the whatever the holding calls. And so maybe that was a makeup call, or maybe they drew attention to that as the game went. So
I see. It's a theory that totally. No, that totally makes sense. And then the kick, I mean, just that, I felt it was like karma catching up. I was like, the football gods stepped in and were like, no, we're not going to let that penalty decide the output of this game. You're going to miss the field goal. The right team wins, you know. Because everyone, I mean, I don't think Minnesota would have a chance against Carolina. I personally don't think Seattle has a whole lot of a chance against Carolina. I think Carolina's the superior team there. Especially just watching Seattle the last 2 weeks, there's been a little bit where I'm like, you looked really, really hot, but they're stumbling a little bit now, and I don't think Carolina's going to stumble. So, it'll be an interesting game. Anything else about Seattle before we move on here?
Also, Seattle, I know Marshawn Lynch wanted to dress for this game, so I don't know how he is going to be for next week, but if he dresses and gets some snaps, I know that's going to bring a lot of motivation to the team, regardless of his impact. If he dresses and he's ready to roll, that's going to be a huge boost to the team. Just his presence alone. So that'll be something to pay attention to this upcoming week.
No, for sure. Him against the linebackers of the Panthers is going to be amazing if we get to see that battle. I think those are, for my money, those are my two favorite linebackers in the league that roam the backfield of the Panthers. And just to watch Lynch go against that is going to be great. The game that I watched was the Green Bay-Washington game. This game was actually much closer than it looks. Washington hung in the game a lot of the game. They were with him the whole time, and then at the end, really, Green Bay was able to break out and take over. And I think, if anything, it shows a difference of experience. Green Bay's been there before a lot. They know what they're doing in the playoffs. And even though Rodgers may not have the weapons to get it done this year, he's able to make it happen. And he scored three consecutive touchdowns in the third, fourth quarter, and just to knock it, like, basically over that gap and just knock the game out right there. Washington, I think one of the largest – people always talk about why we don't miss DeSean Jackson, and I think a perfect example is that why they didn't have they were only able to get up to 9 at the beginning when DeSean is going across the end zone and he has the ball in the wrong hand and he's not reaching for it. Even if he isn't reaching for it, that he would at least try. He could tuck it and try with his body. He doesn't have to reach the ball out. He just instead decides to, like, put it on the other side. And I guess he's, you know, assuming his team's going to get at least a yard. But it's a playoff time. You know, it's like a big moment, and you need to push for that. There's something in football today watching. I don't know if you guys all felt this. We've been watching football 17 weeks. And finally now we're watching the playoffs. And the momentum, if somebody doesn't believe in momentum in football, when you watch the playoff games, it is so clear. It's like these two forces pushing on each other. And if one of them gives, it just goes. And they, you know, so I feel like in playoffs, it's rarely back and forth. It's like one team is going to take over, as we saw in KC, obviously. But even in these other games, like here in Green Bay at the end, they just push through at the end, and it's clear this is the better team. They're not messing around today. They're at their best, and we're going to watch which team is going to win at their best. But I have to say, Kirk Cousins played a great game. I do think he is the quarterback of the future there, which is a great thing for them to have. And now they just have to build around him, and I think he already has some great weapons. And that defense played Green Bay really tight for a long time. But I don't know if it's fatigue. I wish we had Neil on the show tonight. I don't know how he's feeling about the Washington loss, but like what he saw the team fail at. As I was watching it, it just felt that Green Bay got confident and hot. But I'm sure that he saw it differently as a Redskins fan. I don't know enough of their defense to understand where the what was giving, if that makes sense. Did anybody else check out this game? Does anybody have any comments?
Well, I think what's interesting is I think if there was a cohesive theme throughout the weekend, other than the fact that all four of the road teams won, which hasn't happened in a round of the playoffs before. But it was actually, I mean, I would make the case that the defense was the difference in this game as well. I mean, the Redskins defense isn't bad by any stretch, but sort of as I predicted on the recap show or the preview show, you know, Aaron Rodgers just started to be able to find the matchups that he wanted. And the pass rush wasn't really getting to him. And the opposite was true on the other side. I think this Packers defense is very good, and it's really them that kept them in this game. I mean, the first quarter or so was totally dominated by the Redskins, but then as the Packers slowly started figuring out how to get things moving, largely on the ground, actually, they started being able to put some points on. It was really, I feel like, the Packers defense that kept them in it, because they got some big sacks at different times. They ended up with six sacks, and Cousins, you know, fumbled it three times. He only lost one of them, but I mean, he was being harried the entire time. And a lot of those were coverage sacks. I mean, he just couldn't find anything that was open. And really, I think it was that side of the ball that made this win possible for Green Bay, because they're down to also like their, you know, third and fourth receivers. Devontae Adams got injured in this game. I don't know if he's going to be out for, you know, extended period of time, but they got to worry if he is. But yeah, that's what I find impressive. And that may be the thing. I mean, I was, after watching these games, I also came away with, from the point of view that, you know, neither of these, the winners of either of these NFC games are going to win next week anyway. I mean, I don't see the Packers or Seattle necessarily win. At least that's not going to be my picks. But I do think that what is going to keep them in those games is going to be defense. And it's interesting that defense, despite all the focus on the big passes and the quarterbacks, it's played such a big role, at least so far in the playoffs. I think AFC is totally about who's got the best defenses. And it'll be interesting to see if that continues to be a theme moving forward.
Any other thoughts on Green Bay as we move forward from here?
Boy, cool. Boy, do they look dangerous. You know, if Rodgers gets going, I mean, it could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, Rodgers is still Rodgers, apparently, right? Yeah, when he wants to go. I do have to say, I think Washington's secondary is not their strongest unit. But, yeah, when Rodgers wants to get going, man, he does some impressive things. Just so confident. It's something about that, watching him play. He's just literally willing things to happen. So, yeah, let's just, as we wrap up the show here, we don't have a whole lot to do, and I don't want to steal a lot from Pod, who's going to be having the division round preview in a couple days. He's going to be on the show, I believe it's Wednesday. But before we get to that, I'd love to just hear from each of you. I'm just going to ask each super fan who has a game next week, if you can just give me a real quick preview of what you're excited about for this game. Nick, you're first with you going up against Pod Vader's own New England Patriots. How are you feeling about this game? Are you confident? What do you think is going to happen?
I actually am pretty confident. I mean, there's a lot of people that were really rooting for the Bengals, hoping that we'd get to go to Denver instead. We've proven that we can beat them before, and we're more familiar with them. Whereas, you know, the Patriots are the Patriots, is the playoffs. But I actually think the Chiefs match up very well against the Patriots. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I actually may try to go up and be Foxborough for this game. So I'm pumped.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I hope you can do that. Yeah, I think you guys are a scary team for them to face. I'm sure they are not stoked to have drawn you as the opponent. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. Greg, you are on your way to Denver, as he was just talking about. How are you feeling? Are you confident? What do you think this game's going to be like?
I think I am very confident. The Steelers have a really good record against Peyton Manning in the postseason. And back to my deja vu theme, in 2005, when the Steelers beat the Bengals at home, they went to play the number one seeded Colts, which was quarterbacked by Peyton Manning. And we're doing that again now, going to the number one seeded Denver Broncos, quarterbacked by Peyton Manning. And so it would just be kind of cool if the Steelers won. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think Denver is going to struggle to keep up with the passing game like they did in the regular season matchup. But I'm just really looking forward to, like, you got two historic quarterbacks going at it, and history's going to be made. So
Nice. To both of you, Nick and Greg, I wish you guys health with your teams going into these games. And, yeah, I hope you guys go in there and win. Those will be great games. Jimmy, you are the one who's coming off to get the bye. You kicking it now, just waiting for Seattle to show up. How are you feeling? You confident? What do you think is going to happen?
I'm confident, but I'm not comfortable. I definitely think this is going to be the closest matchup of the weekend. I mean, all good matchups all weekend, but this is going to be a very close matchup. Like I kind of hinted at before, I think Carolina is going to really try to focus on exposing the aggressiveness of the Seattle defense. And at the same time, I think Seattle is going to do the same thing. There's been several times, one game especially, I recall the Colts when they played Carolina, they exposed Luke Kuechly being a little too aggressive on the read option. I think they're going to try to focus on that and use Russell with his legs. But I think it's going to be very physical, very blow-by-blow game. Not a lot of mistakes. Both teams are pretty fundamental. And I think I'll give you a little preview. I think two players to watch for Carolina on the offensive side of the ball. I think Devin Funchess comes out a little bit here. And I think Cameron Artis Payne is going to have kind of like an Ahmad Bradshaw breakout, kind of like he did with the Giants. I think Jace Stew gets shut down a little bit, and I think Cameron Artis Payne will be the change of pace back to make some noise.
Nice. Well, I wish you all luck. The fourth game is going to be great as well, Green Bay, Arizona. I think Arizona is going to pull it out, but Arizona fell a little bit at the end of the season as well. They started to, like, get a little wobbly. We'll see. I think Green Bay obviously has some magic in their pocket. They may be able to pull it out. Hopefully all of you guys will be back on Pod Show. Please do a super battle if you can and get there on Wednesday to talk with Pod about this upcoming weekend. I'm jealous of all of you who have dogs still in the race. As we don't even have a head coach. But yes, thank you all for joining us. We are Next Fan Up. I am Mark Sitko. Thank you so much for joining me, Nick, Greg, and Jimmy. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook. Just type in Next Fan Up and you'll find us there. We're always looking for super fans. Please reach out. And yeah, I think that we are on now to the next round of the playoffs.
Well, we're on to Cincinnati.